You're listening to Houston Indie Media on KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. About to hear Mark Cook speaking at last week's Fight Toxic Prisons conference in Denton, Texas. Mark Cook spent 40 years in prison, where he became a Black Panther and helped form the first Black Panther Party chapter started in a prison. He was also part of the George Jackson Brigade. Be warned, some of the audio contains disturbing content.
Okay, I'm Mark Cook. I spent about 40 years of my life behind bars. Part of my sentences ran from 653 years to two life sentences, pretty much running consecutive. And you wonder how I'm out here. I really don't know myself. I have got a lot of support, and they just kind of got scared of me in a lot of prisons. They just figured it's better to have them on the streets than have them in prison. And I'll tell you why. First, to start off with, understand I was a kid about 14 years old. Let me get 15 years old. And I broke a window in high school. I'm autistic, so I have trouble speaking sometimes. Sometimes I have trouble hearing people what they're saying. So I had an issue about racism in the cafeteria, and I couldn't convey it, so I just threw this milk bottle through a window. In those days, they gave kids milk in little glass bottles. They didn't have the paper cards they have nowadays. And I just threw it, and it just went through a window. Breaking that window resulted in my being brought before a juvenile court. My mother was raising eight kids. I'm one of the eight kids. And I figured that judge figured, well, she can't handle this. She's got too many kids to handle. The only way to handle this kid is to put him in a mental hospital. Now, this is the beginning of my life in prison. I was put in this mental hospital, and they had an exercise thing where you pushed a huge wooden block with a blanket underneath it across oaken floors to polish it three times a day. Every day after meal, you have to push this block. Well, I finally refused to push the block. So they take this 15-year-old kid, and they put him on a ward for the criminally insane. And in that ward, you sat in a rocking chair. You weren't allowed to speak. You want to go to the bathroom, raise your hand. You go to the bathroom and come back out. When we showered, we all stood in line, and we'd soap ourselves down in this bathtub, then stand in line to wash the suds off. In that bathtub, scum that thick was floating around in it. These men had various diseases, among them syphilis. Okay, this was our daily shower. There's three of us on this ward, teenagers, decided we couldn't handle this no more. So, well, one of the things that pushed me into doing this is I had to help hold down other patients while they give them electric shock treatments. I don't know if you've ever seen these things. They're horrible to watch. Today I know that it was pure torture because they weren't curing these people. And if they had scars on their faces, these scars would blow up like bubblegum on their faces. We'd hold them at their shoulders and their elbows to keep them going out of joint while they're doing this. They had a rubber heel in their mouth to keep them from cracking their teeth from these things. Well, like I said, we're kids, 15, teenage kids, acting as orderlies, holding these patients down, so we figured we're getting out here one way or another. So we made ourselves some shanks, and we were willing to actually kill these guards to get out. But one of us was being examined by a psychiatrist who used hypnosis. And on this kid, he used his hypnosis, so you just clear your mind of all the things that are on your mind, blah, blah, and he came up with the escape plan. This was in Washington State in Northern State Hospital. They shipped us to the Eastern State in what they call a slaughterhouse, Eastern State Hospital. These are really the criminally insane, the most criminally insane on three floors, and they stuck us one on each floor. And things, in a sense, got worse. One of the patients decided he had tell the story that we were trying to do an escape in order to, so he could move to a less violent ward. I was tortured. They stripped me, put me in a straitjacket with my arms like this. Again, I'm still this kid. Over a hospital bed with no mattress on it. They ran a sheet, tied a sheet on one side of the bed, ran it under my arm, behind my neck, down here, and just tied it on this side. They cuffed my feet to the bottom of the bed. When they pulled that sheet, it would raise me up off that bed, and then it beat me in the stomach. Well, I screamed, I cried, and I begged for him to stop. And then I cussed him out and I told him, you know, just go ahead, I got more ass than you got leather. I just totally went insane as a kid. That was my first real bout with torture in prison. They took me out there, they chained me and put me in bed. I was chained in the bed for about a week. After that, they had me in chains when they put me out in the population with the other patients who were also in chains. This is before they ever had Thorazine. Some of those people were in chains for decades. These are the so-called criminally insane. Well, finally, a new doctor took over, and he ordered them to take everybody out of chains. They're going to try this new Thorazine. The Thorazine, in a sense, it did work. I mean, it's a terrible drug. You look at it today, it's a terrible drug, but back then, it was better than chains, I'll tell you that. Well, that was my experience. I spent 3 years in that hospital going through some of the weirdest crap you ever heard of. And for a kid, they didn't have foster homes. So they put them in mental institutions. That's what it really amounted to. I got out of mental hospital at about 20, maybe 21 years old. Tried to get a job. Couldn't find any work. Tried to go in the Air Force. They said, you're ready for ROTC. But they pushed my papers further and said, no, you were in a mental hospital. Can't even go into service. And so I did what a lot of people do. I couldn't find a job, so I decided to be a thief. I got 20 years, three 20-year terms for being a thief. I went to prison in the reformatory, got in trouble there. They sent me to the maximum prison penitentiary for men. I was 21 years old at that time. And while I was there, they had me working in a laundry, and it was racist. They had all the blacks and Indians working in the back and all the whites up front working on the main machines like the washers and the dryers, etc. We just did the hothead presses in the back. So one day I got fed up with this as I was leaving, going to the mess hall. I was the only one in there with my boss, and he was standing by this extractor. Extractors are these huge round things where you put clothes in to wring them out. Well, I just pushed him. He went in the extractor, I hit that lid, it came down, and I turned it on. And I was walking down the ramp, and I said, nah, this is a really bad idea, Mark. So I came back and let the lid up, and I just went to the mess hall. And of course, they couldn't get me out of the mess hall, but he was going around and around trying to get out of it. But this is the first time I ever reacted to racism, you know, at that level. I call this the, what do you call it, extreme persuasion. I was putting on it, but I figured that wasn't the time. It'll come later. So they put me in solitary confinement, and I don't know how long I was in there, maybe a year, and it's time for me to get a parole board review, and I said, I'm not going, I'm not crazy, I'm not going to waste my time. And they came back with a goon squad and dragged me before the parole board. And there happened to be a black man on that parole board out of Seattle. And I wasn't speaking at all. I just refused to say anything. And he says, Mark, I know your mother. Me and your mother went to school together. So this is the thing that got me out of the hole. But it got me more than out of the hole. He convinced him to parole me. He said, he never should have been put in that hospital to start off with. And that just started a chain of events. So I was released after doing about 5 years. Again, I couldn't get a job. I did finally get a job. I got a job working in a hotel, a major hotel. Got married, had a kid, was getting ready to adopt two more kids. My wife, who was First Nation, and she had this, what do you call it, I try to remember this thing. Potlatch. She had this potlatch mentality. If she had something and other Indians didn't have anything, she'd give everything we had to them. She just kept doing this by checks. So I figured I need a little supplemental help here. So I did three more robberies, got busted, three 50-year terms, mandatory 15 minimum. It sent me to the penitentiary. So while I was in a penitentiary, this is about 1969 or so, 68. No, I was in the county jail, 1967. And Huey Newton and some Panthers showed up on the steps of the Capitol with firearms, saying, "We are the Black Panther Party. We're the civil defense for our community." That impressed me a lot. And then I started reading this stuff, and this other prisoner with me said, "Hey, let's start a Panther Party." When we got to penitentiary, we wrote to Huey Newton and asked him if we could start a chapter of the Panther Party within that prison. And he said, yeah, it was the first prison Black Panther Party ever started in a prison. Read George Jackson. George Jackson said, do what Mao said. You know, Mao didn't do everything right, but one thing he did say is base your revolution on the conditions that you are living under, not somebody else's, the conditions you are living under. And so, using the 10-point program, we applied it to what was happening in that prison. We set up a pretty good Panther Party within that prison. I got involved with a couple Canadians. These are white Canadians, one a French Canadian, what's that other guy? Oh, yeah, a Scottish Canadian. And these wanted to start an underground newspaper in the prison. And I said, you know, it's not going to work. I've done a lot of time already. And that's not going to work. He says, we've got to figure out how we can make it work and how we can do this thing. They'll never know we're doing this underground newspaper. One of them had what they call a curio permit to do little jewelry boxes. So he was able to buy wood materials, and he had these a huge piece of glass, a mirror, where he cut them out and put them in the jewelry boxes. But he didn't cut this one up. He used masking tape and did a big rectangular square there, masked it in. We stole gelatin from the kitchen, boiled it down in our cells with stingers, poured it on this glass, and when it got solid, we'd do typing on the back of what we call a Ditto Master papers. Some of the older people know what Ditto Master was. We'd do it on the back of this tape paper, put it on a gelatin, press it down, smooth it, and peel it off. And that was our printing press. So we were able to print enough copies to go to 20% of the population, and it spread like a wildfire. We call it the bomb. And, but this was my first real connection to journalism and how important it is for organizing. We organized that prison. This is the first prison we organized. We put in there what everybody talked about. It's not, it wasn't about me or, you know, the people who were in there. They never knew who did it. They didn't know whether we were black, white, whether they're, you know, disabled or anything. They just knew what we were putting in there is what they felt. And then we started putting in suggestions how we were going to resolve this thing. It resulted eventually in shutting down the prison. There was other instances that came up where we had to seize the opportunity and had them shut it down. It said, if you care, grow hair. You weren't allowed to grow any facial hair, sideburns. Your hair had to be a quarter inch or less, or you'd go to the hole. So everybody started growing hair. That's when the guys looked like a bunch of hippies in there. They had beards and everything. And the warden's getting upset. He couldn't control his prison. So he wanted to call the leadership of the con bosses to see what was going on. A con boss is somebody who's been working at a job in a prison a long time, so he gets to select who's going to work on these jobs, in the laundry or the kitchen or whatever, you know. And some of the con bosses were athletes. They were the superstars as baseball players or football players. We used to play regular football in prison at that time and did boxing. I just happened to be, I was in college at the time, so they figured they needed to call a black person up there along with these others. They actually called the guys who did the bomb along with some others up there. And they said, well, what can we do to settle this thing that's going on in prison? He said, well, we started giving suggestions, you know, and somebody in the Capitol said, get them to write out a constitution or something and let us know what it is. We wrote our constitution, and we asked for the moon. And we give it to them, and the warden says, no way. And the people in the Olympics said, no, they're going to have to water this thing down. Sent it back to us. We did another one. No, the first one we did, we told the population that the guys who wrote the Constitution, which was us, you know, they don't know who we are selling you guys out. You burned that Constitution. So they went in front of the mess hall, and they burned the Constitution. And so when we wrote the next one, you know, we had things the way we wanted it. We called it the 50-50 program. The prison could run the security part of the prison. We wanted to run the, the treatment and entertainment parts of the program. They said, that's cool. And that was the beginning of my political activism. Learning from the 10-point program of the Panther Party, and then working with these Canadian revolutionaries, the immigrants, in my column, they threw in the penitentiary with us. There were six of us. So we had one of our immigrants was in for a second-degree murder, and we wanted to get him out of there. So we put this plot together. It's called, RGC. Roberts Goes to Canada. His guy's name was Roberts. Okay, 3 minutes. I'm going to have to speed this up and cut it short. Okay. But eventually, we got him elected as a president of this new committee, this constitution. And he could go outside of prison, down the minimum security, back and forth. And finally, we had somebody go down and pick him up and take him to Canada. So that was the first successful escape I ever helped with in a penitentiary. Okay, well. Okay. But the... That's not the main thing. I mean, the main thing was eventually we were able, I'm going to skip a lot of stuff in here, we were able to convince the state to let us have an abandoned women's prison outside of the main prison. And select people, 15 people, who had more than 15 years to work in this program. We're going to do reupholstery. And we had somebody who could go downtown and do sales and bring in customers from the state, federal, and local agencies who wanted reupholstery done. So we had this thing going. And we had to get funding for it. Like I said, I'm speeding this thing up a little bit. We eventually got $250,000 to pay for the maintenance of that building and to hire one prison guard to make a call in to say how many prisoners were there every day. And nobody ran off. It was a perfect program. Okay. The governor came down. Dan Evans of Washington State came down. He looked at the program. He liked it. Somebody in the program convinced him to send me to Seattle to a halfway house. Now, I got a 15-year minimum, and I'm not qualified for a halfway house. But they sent me to the halfway house. When I got there, the people in the halfway house didn't know who I was. Eventually, I said, let me go home. He said, no, you're going to stay here until we find out who you are. But anyways, they kept me there for 1 year. And during that 1 year period of time, they had me go into a work release program in a Seattle Community College. So they gave me 1 hour free time. During that 1 hour, I went around. I found the student unions. I found the prisoner programs. I found the prisoner program like Women Out Now and the prisoner union. Several people. I went to the American Friends Service Committee everywhere, telling them I wanted to put together a conference, and I want you people to help me put this conference together. You know, and we'll do a forum once a year. And we're going to get prisoners out to come to this conference. We're going to get wardens and we're going to get staff out to come to this prison. We're going to get judges. And they said, cool, cool. So I'm in the halfway house getting these checks, you know, to fund this thing. But I still have to stay in that halfway house for a whole year. Eventually we did hold a conference. Okay, I'm going to skip over that and get really right down to the nitty-gritty here. George Jackson Brigade. Okay, the Black Panthers have gone to Seattle to be bodyguards for Elaine Brown in Oakland. So I needed to get a program going in Seattle. And so I got a program similar to what I did inside of the penitentiary with some ex-cons. And we hired ex-cons off the streets, people on probation, people in work release, to come and work. We had five different projects to work on in this project we set up, but we called it the Pivot Project. Okay, that's going on there, so forget about that. Okay, so there's some activism going on in Seattle, underground activism, and it's called the George Jackson Brigade. They needed money to fund their project. There was one instance where in Walla Walla where they had prisoners in solitary confinement who were being tortured, beaten. There was a lot of things that were wrong, and they did the general, what we do nowadays, the gentle persuasion, you know. Please, please, you know, help them, get them out of the prison, don't do that thing. And the government just ignored them, ignored everything. So we went up and blew up the Department of Corrections in the state capitol. They fired the warden, got rid of some guards, and let them guys out of solitary confinement. And that was my introduction to the George Jackson Brigade. I was told by the Panthers in Oakland to join the George Jackson Brigade to find out who they were. You'd be surprised who they were. LBGT, it's the white folk, it's the Indians, the blacks. And so that was a culmination of my activism. But we did a lot of bombings in support of workers' rights. Seattle City Light went on strike because women weren't getting the same wages or had the same jobs as men. We did a bombing there, blew out a transformer, electric transformer in the rich neighborhood. They got their jobs. They got their wages. Okay, so we did a lot of actions like that. And everyone, this is two books written about it, the U.S. Guerrilla USA and Movement with Teeth, and it details what's going on there. But the whole thing was journalism. We put out a memorandum for everything we did. We had it published in the newspapers and gave it to the media saying why each bombing was done. And this was journalism. We called it armed propaganda. So I'm going to end right there. Just somebody else will speak.
Shout out to all the members of the Houston Indie Media Collective, past and present. This is V, reminding everyone out there, don't hate the media, be the media. Peace.